is spend maybe 10 or 15 minutes, in a sense, taking issue with something that is routinely said in left circles, anti-war circles, progressive circles. And by the time I finish, I hope I'll be able to make sense of it. On the video, at anti-war rallies, it's often said, dissent is patriotic, peace is patriotic, as a counter to the attempt to impose upon us a conception of patriotism that is narrow and repressive. We have responded as a movement, I consider myself part of all these movements, with an attempt to redefine patriotism and draw on traditions, not only in the US, but traditions, human traditions, about freedom of speech and dissent. And I understand strategically and rhetorically why one would want to do that. But I'd like to offer a slightly different perspective and begin by saying that I am not patriotic, and I will not accept the concept of patriotism. Now, by that, I don't mean that I have pledged allegiance to another nation state. I was born and raised in the U.S., and although I was born very close to the Canadian border, I am not now going to proclaim myself a Canadian or anything like that. I instead want to spend a little time trying to take apart the concept of patriotism as a way of making both a philosophical point and a political point, but also to inform those strategic and rhetorical decisions we have to make. And I'm not saying that I think in all situations that to claim peace is patriotic or dissent is patriotic is the wrong strategy. I think these are complex, as most strategic questions in politics are, they are complex. But I do want to try and make an argument about a basic sort of philosophical point. And so what I want to do is explain why I am not patriotic. And again, by that, I am not, by that statement, committing an act of terrorism against the United States or anything like that. And this is philosophical. I'm a professor. I don't matter in the world. Nobody pays attention to us anyway. So if the FBI is here, don't worry. I'm harmless. The common definition of patriotism, and I think it's a sensible one, is that it is love of or loyalty to one's nation state, one's country. And I think the place to go with that in examining that concept is to ask, what do we mean by nation state? What do we mean by country? It's perfectly fine to have love of or loyalty for any number of things, but a nation state, we should remind ourselves, is not a naturally occurring object. It's not like a human being or a rock. You know, it's an ideological construction. It's a concept. So when we say, I love my country or I'm loyal to my country, I think the place to start is, what are we really saying? And when I began trying to work through this, I went down a list of everything I could imagine that would mean. And at the end of the list, I came to the conclusion that none of them were morally or politically viable or defensible. So the list I'm going to run through, I'll sketch it first, is it could mean country as the land, the physical space. Or it could mean country as the people. Or it could mean country as the culture. Or country as specific political leaders. Or specific political policies. Or the country as a set of governmental institutions. Or finally, it could mean the country as a set of ideals about democratic government. Now, my argument is going to be, and I'm going to go real quickly through this, I've elaborated on this much in much more detail in something I've written, subtle plug for a book that's coming out in about 3 months called Citizens of the Empire, The Struggle to Claim Our Humanity, in which there's a chapter on this. But what I want to do is go through all of those quickly and explain why they just don't make any sense. If love of country or loyalty to country means love of land, I find that a sort of unusual way to talk about patriotism. Many of us do love the land, especially love land we were born and raised on. I'm from North Dakota. It's prairie. It's this beautiful, flat, usually covered with snow kind of place, right? It inspires great... Okay, so you guys are from the South. You don't get it. Okay, but I love snowdrifts, okay, so I'm weird. And I live in Texas now. It's a very strange sort of way to live. But the point is, what does land have to do with nation-state boundaries? Am I supposed to love the prairie of North Dakota, but then when I get up to the Canadian border, I'm supposed to look at the Canadian prairie and say, well, I don't love that quite as much? The point is, we love land, and we should love the land, because we have an obligation to care for the land, and you cannot care for that which you do not love and have affection for. And so when you talk to people who have a real connection to place and to a farm they grew up on or something, that's, I'm not contending that's bad. I think it's good, but it has nothing to do with nation states. The same thing about people, right? We all have affection for people, and often we have the most deep affection for the people around us. But again, that doesn't map onto anything that has to do with a nation state boundary, right? Again, I have a certain affection for people from North Dakota. I grew up with them. I understand the funny accent. Geez, you know, they talk a little strange, but I kind of like it, you know? So now, I now live in the state of Texas where people really talk funny, and I don't get the food they eat and all sorts of things. Now, am I supposed to, because the North Dakota and Texas are within the same nation state boundary, have some sort of special affection for Texans more than, let's say, the Canadians who live in Manitoba right over the border from me, who I share more in common with and feel more sort of just affection for, you know, as a matter of course. So again, it's not that people shouldn't have deep emotional connections to other people. We do. But it doesn't have anything to do, or shouldn't have anything to do, with people. Unless, short footnote, you're going to make the claim that living within the boundaries of the nation state that we call the United States means that we are special people, that our lives mean more than the lives across the border. Now, if you're going to make that claim, and I think implicitly sometimes people do, including some people who live in big white houses, right, then you're saying I am going to go against every major moral and religious tradition in contemporary history, because all of the major philosophies and religions are based on the intrinsic equality of all of us. Our lives are worth the same. My life is worth the same as a child in Afghanistan, as a peasant in India, as someone in Africa. We're all, okay, so if you're going to make claims about the specialness of American people, then what you're doing is repudiating every decent instinct in moral philosophy and theology, and I don't think even George Bush wants to do that, if he understood the concept. Okay, now, what about culture? Is it somehow love or loyalty for the culture we grew up in? That doesn't work either, for the same reasons it doesn't work for land and people, especially given that most of us have serious problems with many aspects of American culture, right? Aspects of American culture around excessive materialism or the nature of race and gender politics, all sorts of things. All right, so it doesn't work on culture either. What about leaders? Patriotism is love of or loyalty to leaders. That's antithetical to democracy. That's an authoritarian regime. If you're claiming patriotism is about loyalty to leaders in a country based on the concept of the sovereignty of the people, then you might as well just put the old brown shirt on, because that's fascism. Okay, that's literally fascism. So patriotism can have nothing to do with love of or loyalty to leaders. Same thing for policies. What does it mean to be in a democracy if it doesn't mean that you can reject policies, even if they are the lawful policies of your government? You may decide you're going to follow the law, but it doesn't mean you have any love of or loyalty. And there are no small number of laws in the United States and policies that I have no love of or loyalty for. All right. Well, here people start to, when you lay this out, people get a little nervous, you know, especially Republicans, because they don't like where this whole argument is heading, okay? So that the next place is to drop back to two potential defenses. One is to say, listen, okay, we agree, you don't have to love George Bush. The other ones don't make any sense. You don't have to love George Bush's policies. Okay, but at least you can agree that to be patriotic is to have love of or loyalty for the institutions of government in this culture. But that falls apart just as easily, because after all, you may remember, this country was founded on a repudiation of the idea that that which exists today will exist forever, right? When the governmental institutions no longer serve the people, those great founding fathers tried to argue, then the people have the right to shed those governmental institutions, right? Now, we have certain institutions which have a deep history, representative government, two houses of Congress, a balance of powers, and I'm not saying I'm against all of them. I think some of them are quite nice. I don't necessarily think they are the ultimate fulfillment of democracy, and I don't want to be tied to some absolute commitment that I will never want to reject the House of Representatives, Senate, the White House, and the judiciary as we know it. You know, it just may be possible we may someday come up with a better way to do that. And if you look at Capitol Hill these days, it's hard not to imagine that we won't someday come up with a better way to do it. If we don't, heaven help us. So it can't be about love of or loyalty to government institutions, even if we understand that those governmental institutions do in some ways further democracy, and we may be committed to them in certain ways, but it can't be that we think they are the ultimate fulfillment, and we can't therefore pledge loyalty to them. If somebody came up to me and said, here's a plan that's going to do away with Congress and replace it with a different set of institutions, and I think those institutions will do a better job of bringing to all of us equality, liberty, and democracy, I'm likely going to be all for it. All right, so the last place you can fall back on the argument for patriotism, I think, is that patriotism, especially in the United States, is not about any of these things I've just listed. It's about the ideals of democracy. That to be patriotic is to be loyal to and to have love for those values implicit in our society, the equality of all people, even if it took us a few hundred years to get there, all right? Or freedom in a certain way, freedom of expression, political freedoms. Again, I'm not criticizing those values. They are values I believe in. But there are two questions that we have to ask. One is, if you're claiming patriotism is the love of or loyalty to those values, you're implicitly claiming they are somehow uniquely American. And are they? Is a love of freedom uniquely American? Is the desire to speak freely a purely American concept? Did we invent this? I hate to tell, you know, George and the boys, but people were talking about free speech before the American Revolution. People were talking about equality. These are not American values uniquely. It doesn't mean that we don't take them seriously here or that we shouldn't keep fighting for them. It means they are not American, because to claim they are is the ultimate act, I think, of arrogance. Right? The whole world is struggling. Do you think no one else around the world is struggling to make good on the promise of freedom? It's absurd. Okay. Well, then people, there's one last fallback position people give me. And they say, well, okay, admitted, these are universal human values. We want to be part of a worldwide movement that makes them real, not just in the United States. We care about whether people are free elsewhere. Okay, all that's true. But at least you have to admit, they say, usually pointing a finger, at least you have to admit that it is in the United States that these values have been most fully realized. And which I say, interesting. Okay, let's do some history. This is the country in which those values have been most fully realized. This is also the country whose very existence relies on two genocides of Holocaust proportions. The almost complete extermination of indigenous people to secure the land base which is this country, and African slavery which secured the material wealth of this country in the Industrial Revolution. Okay, now, that's, even eighth grade history students know those. Okay, and people say, okay, but you know, there's been progress. And indeed there has been progress. Look at the composition of this panel. This panel wouldn't have happened even 30 years ago at this university, I suspect. Okay, so it's not to say there isn't progress, but is there a way in which we can so arrogantly go forward to say that we are the ultimate fulfillment of democracy? It's unquestioned that the expansion of political freedom in this country, especially in the 20th century, has been dramatic. We have free speech rights today that are, I think, in the terms of the legal guarantees, are unparalleled in human history. The fact that this panel exists, the fact that we've been, many of us since 9/11, speaking, it doesn't mean there haven't been people who've been targeted, especially people from the most vulnerable classes, non-white, immigrant, right? That's true. But the fact is also we enjoy political freedoms today that are unparalleled either, I think, in American history, and to some degree unparalleled anywhere. All right. Now, that's arguable, but the fact is we do have a fair amount of freedom. But freedom isn't like, you know, judging the amount of rainfall. It's not a simple quantification. At the same time that in the 20th century, the American society was expanding its conception of who counted as a person and what those freedoms were that attached to people, the United States, especially after World War II, was also going forward on the third American Holocaust, which was an attack on the primarily non-white peoples of the third world who were attempting independent development. So if you want to tell the people of the world that we are the ultimate fulfillment of democracy, I would suggest you start at Hiroshima, make your way to Indonesia, to South Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Central America, Angola. Make your way around the world where the direct result of American policy has been to extinguish the legitimate aspirations of people. You might go through the Middle East today. You might talk to the people of Iraq and find out how they felt about U.S. support for Saddam Hussein. You might talk to the people in Gaza or the West Bank. It is arrogance to an unbelievable degree to claim that any one nation could be the ultimate fulfillment of such deep and rich values as free speech, liberty, equality, right? Especially at a time when the disparities of wealth in this country grow, when we still have 40 to 45 million people without routine health insurance, right? On what axis are we going to evaluate this ultimate fulfillment of democracy, right? Because if you want to look at some things like social indicators about infant mortality and health care and, you know, that kind of thing, it looks to me like the ultimate fulfillment of democracy may be Scandinavia or someplace, right? Which doesn't, and it's interesting that Scandinavians don't routinely go around claiming to be the ultimate fulfillment of anything. They just claim to be Scandinavians, right? So I think the point of all this is, if you walk through the question, what is it that I am claiming love of or loyalty to, right? Everything you can possibly answer falls apart, either just because it's kind of nonsensical, like the people and the land, or because it's antithetical to democracy, leadership and policies, or because it's an act of arrogance so supreme that I don't think anybody would really want to claim it. Right. Now, pardon? Well, I was the assumption of that was rational actors who have some conception of morality. So now, where I want to finish is simply that when I make this critique, was walking through this with a class once, and this very frustrated young woman said, "You don't get it." She said, "It's not about any one of those things, it's about all of them together." And I said, so you aggregate a lot of bad answers to get a good answer? I said, you can't take, you know, individually 7 or 8 things that don't make sense and roll them into a pie and bake it and expect it to come out, right? So that's not, you can't just say, well, it's all that stuff, because none of that stuff works. The last place people go with me is they say, listen, we're talking about love, right? You know, love is not some bloodless, rational thing, and I agree completely. I have been in love. Thank God I'm not at the moment, right? So my life is much more simple. Well, maybe I've just had bad luck. Okay, the point is, let's get off my personal history, which is going to go nowhere fast. The point is, I'm not against love. I have deep affection for all sorts of things and people, right? But they are things and people that are tangible. The point I'm trying to make is not that love is a bad thing, right? But that it's that to which we attach love that we have to investigate, right? The concept of loving and having affection and all of that crazy stuff that makes us human and makes life worth living is very important. But where are we going to attach it? Are we going to attach it to real people we have commitments to? And are we going to attach it to ideals that we want to share universally? Or are we going to attach it to somebody's conception of a nation state, which if we do that, will inevitably use against us, and more importantly, given the power of the United States, used against the people of the world? Thank